So let's talk a little bit about meditation practice then. And this is going to be, I'm not going to talk about the suttas tonight, I will start with the suttas tomorrow, and tonight is just going to be about how to meditate basically here. Yeah. And then once I've done that, we can try it out and practice afterwards. So the way I'm going to teach meditation here is going to be very simple. I'm going to give some very basic instructions. And the idea is that the basic instructions are the most important ones. If you can do the basic instructions properly, you can actually meditate. That's basically all you require. You don't need very advanced instructions at all. The basic ones are the ones that really matter. And I like to focus on meditation, talking about three different areas. The first is talking about the body, what you do with the body. That's the first thing here. The second thing is about mindfulness, what it means to be mindful in meditation practice. And the last thing I want to talk about is the attitude you have to have, how you set up your mind in such a way that is conducive to meditation. So first of all, about the body. Now, the body is not really important, right? Meditation is about the development of the mind, the cultivation of the mind. So the body is something you want to get out of the way here. You don't want to deal with the body in meditation here. Now, to get the body out of the way here, the very first thing you have to do is to make sure that you sit in a comfortable way. You have to be comfortable. You can't have heaps of pain, right? If you have lots of pain in your body, it's basically not going to work. That's my experience, and I think that's the experience of many, many people, that pain doesn't actually function. So for many of you, if you like to use a chair in your meditation practice, please do so. Please don't feel embarrassed. Please don't feel that you have to compete with your neighbor or anything like that. Just do your thing. Do what works for you, right? It's not a competition. It's about making it work for you. That's what it's all about. So please use a chair. Don't think that you can't meditate properly if you don't sit on a cushion on your bottom on the ground. That's perfectly all right. This is actually incredibly important. It's such a basic thing that you should be comfortable when you sit. It's so basic, and yet very lots and lots of people in the Buddhist world don't do that. They sit in pain for hour after hour, torturing themselves, thinking that this is going to give rise to some kind of positive state in meditation practice. And the reality is that what happens is that after a while you give up. That's what happens. I remember I was in I travel quite a bit because there's very big demand for English-speaking monks around the world. So I go to places like Singapore. And once when I was in Singapore, it's quite close to Australia, it's kind of the neighborhood for Australia. So once I was staying at this man's house in Singapore, and this man wanted to speak to me in the evening. You always have to kind of, you know, people always want to consult with you about meditation. And he told me that he had been to this retreat in Malaysia. And he said it was the worst experience in his entire life. It was absolutely terrible. It was agony. He felt so tense and so stressed out throughout this whole meditation retreat. He said he never ever did he want to go on a meditation retreat again. That's what he told me. And I thought, wow, that's terrible. That's disastrous. And I tried to tell him, well, you know, it depends on how you run this meditation retreat. Not all meditation retreats are the same. So all you need to do is just learn to relax, sit on a chair, learn not to be so tense, learn not to be too strict on yourself. But basically, he was turned off meditation for life because he had one really bad experience like that. And this is what happens. And the whole point of meditation, the whole point of the Buddhist path, it is something which has tremendous potential to basically change your entire life. To change you, to become a more relaxed person, a more loving person, a more kind, a more peaceful person, all of these good qualities, anything that any human being really wants, is available on the Buddhist path, right? It's there available. And then you destroy that whole potential simply because you practice in the wrong way at the very beginning. That's terrible. So please, please, please don't do that. Please make sure that you're comfortable. Sit on a chair. Use the benches that you have. These benches are great. Please use the benches. Please sit in a posture which is comfortable for yourself. Use many cushions if you have to. You know, one under each knee, a couple behind your bottom. You know, whatever it takes, basically, to be comfortable. This is the point of all this. So make sure that you're nice and comfortable. And if you find that during your meditation you get pain in your knees or in your back, please change your posture here. You don't have to sit absolutely still for an hour or half an hour or whatever. Please change your posture here. Just do it quietly. You don't have to make a lot of noise, but please do that. And then the idea with all this is to kind of get rid of the body. The body is not a nuisance. So how do you know if there's too much pain? Of course, there's always going to be a little bit of pain in the body. The nature of the body is such that there's always going to be some problems. That's just the way the body works, right? It's impossible to have a body which is 100% free of pain all the time. It just doesn't work that way here. So how do you know the balance between the right amount of pain, too much pain, and what is acceptable? What is the balance there? And a very simple way of thinking about it is if you find that your mind goes out to the pain again and again, your mind is kind of obsessed by the pain there. You're not able to keep your attention on the breath, for example. You're not able to keep your attention just on being present in the present moment. But your mind tends to kind of obsess about the pain. It goes back maybe two or three times. And once you realize that the mind goes back to the pain, that's usually the time to actually change posture. It's like you can't really detach from it. You can't actually get enough distance to get clarity about what is going on. That is a nice way of looking at it. So this is the first thing. Make sure that the body is comfortable while you practice this meditation practice. And if the body is comfortable, things start to go well. The thing about this whole idea of the body being comfortable is actually one of the most basic teachings of the Buddha. You may have heard about I'm sure many of you have heard about the idea of the middle path, right? The middle path of Buddhism. The Eightfold Path is called the middle way or the middle path. And the idea here is that one of the extremes in the middle way is torturing the body. It's called the self-mortification in English. Basically means you're torturing the body, basically what it means. So you're actually causing pain in the body. And the other extreme, the other end, the other difficulty is if you indulge too much in sensual pleasures. And the middle way between that is an Eightfold Path, the path which leads to calm, leads to insight, and all these other qualities. So it's right there. It's in the very first discourse, the very first teaching by the Buddha. One of the very first things he says is that make sure you don't torture yourself. And still, that's what people do. It's amazing, isn't it? He goes out of his way in his very first teaching, says, please don't practice like this. And still, that's exactly what people do. You go on these really hardcore meditation courses, and they tell you, sit down for 2 hours, and then five times a day for 2 hours without moving. That's what you get told sometimes. And then, of course, nobody comes back afterwards. It's true. Something like 10% come back again afterwards because it's just too much for people. So it's right there at the very beginning of the Buddha's teachings. Don't torture the body. There's a foundational thing in the teaching of the Buddha. On the other side, there's don't indulge in sensual pleasures. But that's not really a problem. It is a problem, but it's not something I can do too much about on the meditation retreat. Because we're not going to the retreat to indulge, we're going to meditate, right? It's not really a problem there. The idea of sensual pleasures is more something you have to move away from in the long run. It's a very long and slow process. These are very sticky things, the sensual pleasures of the world. That's a much more long-term thing. It's the thing you have to be careful about here is the pain side of things. And I think there's something about the human mind where we think that pain is good, right? If you're going to have a spiritual life, then pain is the way to go. Pain is the path. There's something about that, you know? It's like, I don't know what it is, but there's this feeling that you have to kind of suffer to get some happiness afterwards, right? No pain, no gain kind of thing. It's in the proverb in English, isn't it? No pain, no gain. So you have to have pain first, and then maybe get some happiness. And one of the great teachings of the Buddha, he would have discussions with other people, and some of the people that he had discussions with were the Jains. You know about the Jains in India? Yeah, the Jains were the ones that would actually torture their body, right? They would sit on a rock. The Jains were the people who would lie on these beds of nails. You know the beds of nails, right? And they would lie on these beds of nails, and they would stand on one leg for 10 years, and they would sit down on a rock in the baking sun and all these kind of crazy things that they would do. And the reason they did that, because the theory behind the Jain teaching was that by doing painful ascetic practices, by doing that, you would actually purify yourself. Through pain comes happiness. And then the Buddha has a discussion with these people, and the Buddha says, no, it's not through pain that you get happiness. And this is so powerful, what he says there. He says, it's through happiness that you get happiness. Right? Isn't that an amazing saying? It's by being happy that you get more happy. It's such an uplifting teaching, such a wonderful teaching to hear that. It's by being happy, you get even more happy. Happiness creates more happiness. Such a powerful thing, and it goes, I think, very much counter to human nature. Not only in maybe Northern Europe is worse than many places, because we always had this idea of, you know, work hard and all this kind of stuff. But I think it's around the world it's true. It was true in India. I think it's true everywhere, basically. It's a part of human nature. This human psyche thinks that we need pain, but actually what we need is happiness. And this is one of the things that I, you know, all the way throughout, there's only 2 days for this retreat, but all the way, remember that. It's through happiness that we gain happiness. So how can you find happiness in your meditation practice? Don't go down the way, down the road of pain. Stay on the road of happiness. That's where you want to hang out. How can you be more happy? How do you give rise to happiness in life? This is what it's really all about. When I say happiness, I don't mean happiness in some kind of trivial way. I mean real happiness, right? Real contentment, real peace, real feeling good about yourself, feeling a self-fulfillment inside. All of these kind of things, that's what I'm talking about. Real, deep sense of happiness. That's what this is about. And this is where we want to move. It's a wonderful thing, because in the end, I think all beings, whether they are human or whatever they are, everybody wants to be happy in that way. It's hard to find people who really want to be miserable. And if they really want to be miserable, it's probably for some kind of strange reason. They think that that's going to make them happy as well. It's usually, in the end, we all want to be happy, right? In one way or another. So, Buddhist path is about happiness. So go away from the pain. So this is the first aspect of the body. The second part of the body, once the body is free, relatively free of pain, you find the mind doesn't go out of the body all the time. The second thing to do is to make sure that the body is really relaxed, right? Really at ease. You don't actually have any, not only do you not have any pains, but you don't have any tensions in the body. The body, there's no problems in the body anymore. And this is also very worthwhile. Take a lot of time at the beginning of the meditation to make sure that the body is really, really relaxed, really at ease. No tension, no pressures inside. And it's like, and this in itself, you will find, if you do this properly, it's actually a very beautiful state when the body is really, really, usually in life, there's a little bit of tension somewhere. When the body is really, really relaxed, it actually feels, that in itself feels very good. So start with that. Take some deep breaths, allow your shoulders or your face or wherever it is to relax 100%. This is so important. And one of the reasons why it's important, the first thing as I just said, because it feels really good to be in a body which is really nice and relaxed. It just feels really great. And it's a feeling that we're not really used to usually in daily life, because when you're rushing around, there tends to be some tension in the body. The body can't really relax 100%. But the other reason why it is important is because once you start to deal with the tension in the body, you're also dealing with the mind itself. Because it is the mind that controls the body, right? The reason why you feel tense is because the mind is tense. The mind is doing something which controls the body. That's why you feel tension sometimes. So by looking after your body, to make sure the body is relaxed, you're actually relaxing the mind. The mind itself is becoming relaxed. Now we're moving from the body gradually towards the cultivation of the mind itself. So you're moving away from the body towards the cultivation of the mind. So by doing this, just by relaxing, just by feeling at ease, the mind starts to relax itself. Now we'll give you some ideas afterwards how to actually do this, how to actually make sure that the body is really nice and relaxed in this way. Okay, and then we find this beautiful middle way. So that is the first part of the meditation. What I want to talk about is about the body, the physical body, how to deal with that. Now once you find that the body is nice and relaxed, you feel really at ease, you feel really good about yourself, now we're moving even more into the terrain of the mind, how to deal with the mind. Now we're kind of gradually moving in that direction. And the first thing to do is to always in meditation is to establish as much mindfulness as you possibly can. The idea of mindfulness is just awareness, basically, just being present in the here and now, having the ability to just be in the present moment. And again, as I said before, the reason why the body gets tense is because of the mind. The mind is using the willpower on the body. When the willpower is used, it leads to tension inside. Now, if you reduce the willpower on the body, the next thing is to reduce the willpower in the mind itself. And this is what we're doing here, by just learning to be aware, just sitting back and just observing things as they are, just being mindful, just observing. What you're doing is that you are withdrawing the willpower, you're withdrawing the doer inside of you, and just observing, you're just being rather than doing. That's very different from what we normally like in life. Like my teacher Adam Ram, he always says that we should become, we're not actually human beings, we're human doings, right? Why? Because we always do things. So human being is the wrong. So we have to come back to our roots again, which is being a human being. So come back to be a human being. Come back to your roots and just be. And this is what this is about, learning just to be. And this, to give you an illustration of what this is about, sometimes people think that when you meditate, you have to concentrate on something, right? Very often you have one of the translations of the word samadhi. Samadhi is an Indian word which means like you're one pointed on the object of meditation practice. But very often it's translated into English as concentration. In Norwegian it's translated as konsentrasjon, which is exactly the same thing as concentration. But the word concentration in English always means that you're using a little bit of force, right? You're grasping hold of the object, holding on to it, you're using force there. And it's like, imagine yourself when you go to work, right? You go to work and you have to read something, and sometimes the things you have to read might not be all that interesting, or you're writing something, maybe not all that interesting. Now, so to be able to do something which isn't really interesting, you have to use force, right? You have to force yourself to read it. So if you do that all day, if you force your mind to read something all day, or you force yourself to do a task which isn't really that interesting, how do you feel at the end of the day? You feel tired, right? This is the thing, you go to work, you feel tired because you have been concentrating on something which isn't really all that interesting. You have been forcing yourself to do something which isn't all that great. If something is really interesting, there's no concentration, it happens by itself. And you don't feel tired afterwards. Sometimes you may have a really great job and really enjoy it. Then you come back home and you actually feel full of energy instead of feeling tired from this. And this is the problem with concentration. Concentration tires you out. When you finish concentrating, whether it's on the breath or a job which isn't so great or whatever it is, because you're using force, you actually feel tired afterwards. The purpose of meditation is precisely not to feel tired. The purpose of meditation is to learn to relax and actually energize the mind, to fit energy inside it, to feel a sense of joy and happiness and energy. That's the purpose. So instead of concentrating, what we have to do, you have to learn to be completely natural with a meditation object. So the first thing then is just to learn to be natural, to withdraw the will, withdraw the willpower, and just observe what is going on. And one of the great simple similes to understand how to do that is to imagine that you are a passenger. You're not the driver, you're the passenger, right? You're sitting on the bus, you're looking out the window, you have no control over where the bus is going. You're just a passenger. You're not in charge. And if you're a passenger looking out the window of the bus, if you don't like the scenery, you don't go up to the driver and tell, don't go here, go here. You know, the driver's going to get very fed up with you if you do that. So you accept the fact that the bus driver is in charge, right? So you just look at whatever is there. This is what you have to learn in your meditation practice. It's like the bus driver is actually your habits from the past. All the things that have made you the person who you are right now. And those habits from the past are going to ensure, are going to make you remember certain things, having certain thoughts, having, you know, listening to certain things. Your habits are in charge. And all you do is you just sit back and you wait and you watch what's going on. And when you watch what's going on, what you see is you see thinking, you see tiredness, you hear sounds, you hear fantasies coming up, you see pictures in your mind, you have thoughts coming. All of these things are happening, right? And this is, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. So what you do, instead of trying to get rid of that, the usual way is try to get rid of that, you know, oh, I'm going to get rid of these thoughts. And when you do that, you just end up, it gets even worse, because it is that willpower which actually creates all the problems in the first place. So by withdrawing the willpower, by just by watching, just being aware, just being the passive observer, just being the passenger rather than the driver, things start to calm down all by themselves. It's very easy to say this. It's actually not so easy always to do. It's very easy to sit here and kind of give you the theory, but this is very worthwhile, actually trying to learn to be the passive observer. And as you learn that, you will see it's a very beautiful thing. And the reason why it's beautiful is because once the willpower starts to disappear, you start to feel good. You start to realize the willpower is actually painful. There's a certain pain there. Just being completely passive is actually a very beautiful state. So this is what we're trying to do on the second part, being the passive observer. This is basically what mindfulness is all about, being the ability to observe, being with whatever happens, not judging, not saying anything is right or wrong, but just observing, seeing what arises, what passes away, what is there, what isn't there. And what happens is that if this works, it's not always going to work, for some of you it may not work at all, that's okay, at least if you're relaxed, right? But what happens is that as you do this, things start to become peaceful. And then you listen for the peace, and you start to feel the peace. And when you listen for the peace, and you start to feel the peace, you start to feel something completely different, something very nice, something very beautiful that maybe you haven't felt so much before. And this becomes very powerful and beautiful in the meditation practice. And then suddenly the breath is present, right? The thinking is calming down, the sloth and torpor isn't so strong anymore, the mind brightens up, and you start to see the breath. And then the breath, when the breath arises like that, all by itself, that's when you do breath meditation. Breath meditation is not about grasping hold of the breath and holding the breath. That's the wrong way. Breath meditation is about waiting. Just being patient. Waiting till the breath arises by itself. And then when the breath is there, that is when you can do the breath meditation. So this is stage by stage, right? How these things work. So you can see here, what's going on here is that mindfulness is often called satipatthana, is often equated with vipassana practice. But mindfulness is actually the prerequisite, is the thing that you need first of all to be able to do any meditation whatsoever. One thing follows from, one thing comes after another. So this is how I would recommend you to proceed. This is the way you can do whatever you like, of course, but this is what I normally how I normally teach meditation practice. Although this sounds easy in principle, and of course in principle everything is easy, but it's not going to work. It isn't going to work. So what do you do if it doesn't work? What should we do then? And one of the reasons why it doesn't work is because we haven't actually practiced all of the other factors of the Eightfold Path. One of the things you start to see when you practice in this way is that all the other factors have to come together. And when the whole path comes together, all the eight factors come together, the virtue, the morality, the kindness, all of these other things, I will talk more about these things afterwards, then the mindfulness becomes more powerful as well. So often the reason why it doesn't work is because we haven't been practicing the whole path long enough. And then after a while, when the path starts to come together and practice all the factors, that's when things start to kind of come together in this way. So it becomes very very useful. Okay, the last thing, so I've talked about the body, I've talked about a little bit about passive awareness. And the last thing I want to talk about was attitude in meditation practice. What should our attitude be? Sometimes it's good to guide ourselves a little bit, to think about the world, think about things in a certain way, so that we have the right feeling inside of us. We feel the right thing. We have a feeling for the people and the world around us in the right way. And one way of understanding the idea of right attitude is actually to look at these five precepts here, because they are very. These are basically about attitudes. These five precepts. The first one is about abstaining from the killing of living beings, right? Now, in the teaching, the way the Buddha talks about this particular precept is important to understand that it doesn't just have the negative aspect. It's not just that you shouldn't kill, but the Buddha said that you should actually actively be compassionate towards beings around you, right? So it's not just a negative thing, it's actually a positive attitude. And this is what I mean by attitude here. Is this attitude, what is your attitude toward living beings? Do you have an attitude of kindness? Do you have a soft heart toward the beings around you? Do you have a sense of compassion when you see beings being in pain, having difficulties and all these things? What is your attitude towards other beings? And this is incredibly important. If you have an attitude, we actually care for other beings, whether they are human, whether they are animals, whatever they are. If you have an attitude of caring, that is the kind of attitude which comes back to you in meditation practice. What is so amazing is how powerful this is. I try to live according to these principles myself. I don't just teach you these things, right? I also try to do these things myself, of course. And I'm always baffled by how powerful these things are and how incredibly strong they are. Sometimes you do little things in life. And I remember on a few occasions I have done tiny little things like rescuing an insect somewhere, right? An insect which is helpless, lying in some water, it can't get out. And you think, I will rescue this insect from this water. And you rescue the insect and you put it down on the ground. And when you do that with a pure heart, you don't do it because somebody's watching you and you think that you will get some kind of praise because you're doing the right thing. You don't do it because of some kind of any kind of ulterior motive. You just do it because it feels right. And if you do it from coming from the right place, then afterwards you feel so happy about that. It gives you a sense of happiness. You feel joy. Just tiny little things, right? Rescue, it sounds like nothing. You rescue an insect. But sometimes it's amazing where happiness can come from. And of course, even more powerful, if you are kind towards human beings or other animals, larger animals, it's even more powerful. So this is the attitude. So please, in your life, on this retreat, whenever it is, be compassionate, be kind, do good things, you know, do any chance you have in life, never waste a chance to be kind, to be compassionate, to do something good towards other beings. Because every chance you use is going to pay back a millionfold, a billionfold afterwards. So this is the kind of what we mean by attitude. And what you will find is that if you do that, if you act in this way, and then you close your eyes, and as I was saying before, one of the most important principles of meditation is just to be patient, right? You just wait. And then what happens? What happens when you wait, if you have done lots of goodness in your life? What happens when you wait is that all of these memories, the memories of your kind acts, the memories of your compassion, the memories of supporting life, of being a caring person, they come back to you. You don't even have to remember them specifically, but it's like a feeling that you have inside of you. You feel worthy. You feel that there is something good inside of you. And that comes back. And when you close your eyes, you feel happiness, you feel joy inside. It's beautiful. It's very, very powerful. And this is basically how the Buddha explained that the meditation practice is supposed to happen. I don't think I have chosen any of the suttas, but this is how he talks about these things. And one of my favorite suttas, which I always like to teach, to talk about, which I haven't actually included here, and this is a sutta, the simile of the simile of the shadow of the mountain. And this simile, the Buddha says that it's like when someone comes back from work, a man or a woman comes back from work after a long day, and they go back home and they sit down to rest. They've been working really hard, and when you sit down to rest after a long day's work, they lie down on the bed or whatever they do. And when they do that, he says, all the good actions you have done, they come back to you, they envelop you, they surround you, that you are immersed in these good actions. And you cannot help but to feel happiness, you feel joy, you feel good about yourself because you've been a good person. And the Buddha says, just like a big mountain, if you have a big mountain, and you have a little house on the side of the mountain, and in the evening the sun comes down and it goes down behind the mountain, and that shadow of the mountain will kind of envelop and it will completely immerse and completely surround that house. In exactly the same way, you are enveloped, immersed, and completely submerged in the goodness that you have done previously. Isn't that a very beautiful, beautiful simile? I find that so powerful when I read that. I find, wow, this is just so so inspiring. You know, if you want to go out there and you want to do the same things yourself because you realize the power of these things. And this is what it's like. And because it is natural, because you are kind of immersed in these things, and when you close your eyes and you feel, and you're just patient and you relax, that's what happens to you. The mountain of your good actions come back to you, right? This enormous mountain that you have created over many years, over a long period of time, it comes back to you, and then you feel happiness as a result of that. So this is how meditation works. This is why virtue and kindness, and here the first precept, caring for other living beings, why it is so important, and why it has a powerful effect on the meditation practice. Your attitude starts to change. The way you think about other people starts to change. You have more time, more patience, more understanding, and all these kind of things. That is just an example, and the attitude can also be explained through the second precept here. The second precept is about not to steal, right? Again, not to steal is fine. The opposite of stealing, or the reverse side of the coin from stealing, is generosity, right? Giving to somebody. Generosity is also a very important part of the Buddhist path. So if you have the opportunity to be generous, it's really just an extension of the first part, an extension of being kind. If you have the chance of being generous, always be generous whenever you have an opportunity. Because it will give rise to exactly the same thing. It will give rise to this feeling of goodness afterwards. You will feel so happy that you were generous. So how should you be generous? I want to talk a little bit about generosity, because I think it is very, very powerful and very useful thing to talk about, just very briefly. How should one be generous? What did the Buddha say about generosity? And what the Buddha said, he was in a conversation with one of the kings at the time, the king Pasenadi of Kosala, a very famous king in the suttas, and they were conversing, and the king Pasenadi asked the Buddha, where should I give? What do you think he said? Any suggestions? You probably know it. You can't say it. So, sorry? That's exactly right. Where you feel inclined, right? Where your heart goes, where you feel like giving, that is where you should give. He didn't say you should give to me, or he didn't say you should give just to the Sangha or to Buddhism. He said you should give where your heart inclines, where you feel like giving, that's where you should give. Why is that? And the reason for that, and it doesn't actually say in the sutta, but this is what I reckon, having read very broadly in the sutta, the reason for that is because when you give what you feel like giving, it makes a very powerful impact on your mind. When you want to give, when it comes naturally, and you give, you will remember that because you feel a certain degree of happiness in giving to that particular person, or that particular cause, or whatever it is, or that animal, or whatever it is. When you want to give, that means that you are ready. It means that there's a certain happiness that comes from that giving, because you want to give. And then you give, and then it makes a big impact on the mind. Because it makes a big impact on the mind, because the mind is pure when you want to give, you have mindfulness, not too many defilements there. Because it makes a big impact on the mind, it is easy to recall later on. So when you just go back to your meditation again, just like I was saying before, this thing will tend to come up in your meditation practice all by itself, because it has made a strong impact in the past. Right? So this is how it works. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't give to a Buddhist cause or to the Nirodha group or whatever. Please do so. But what I'm saying is that you should actually feel like giving. So if you want to feel like giving somewhere, give there. And then after a while, you learn how to feel positive about the Nirodha group. So you give something to them. Right? maybe you do already, which is great. But something like that. And then slowly, slowly, you develop and you learn how to give. And it's much more fun to give when it feels natural, when it feels kind of easy. And it's great fun to give. And sometimes you get this feeling inside of you. Sometimes I get this feeling. And it's a wonderful feeling here. When you just want to give to everybody, you have this, like your heart opens up, and you get this feeling you just want to give, right? And that is the kind of feeling you want to have. When you just want to give to the whole world. And it's this feeling, when you get into that mind state, it's a very pure mind state. There's no defilements there. It's very peaceful, it's very present. Because that kind of mind state, when you want to give to everybody, you can't be angry at the same time, right? I don't know, how can you really be... No, I think it's absolutely impossible to be angry at the same time and really want to give. And also you can't be greedy, right? You're not thinking about yourself. It's the opposite of greed. There's no anger, and there's no greed, no desire there. So what is left is a very pure mental state. That's all that's left. So this idea, feeling of generosity, and this is why it is so powerful for meditation practice, because it subdues the defilements of the mind, and you get the right attitude. You get this attitude of opening up your heart to the world. Very, very beautiful. And the Buddha says in many places, if you want to attain some very deep state of meditation, like one of the jhanas, or even some of the deep states of insight, the only way you can do that is by having this incredibly open-heartedness, where you just want to give and give of yourself endlessly. This is one of the ways that you can tell whether somebody has gone a long way on the path. How giving are they? A person who is incredibly giving is somebody who has gone a long way on the path. A person who is selfish hasn't gone very far. A person who is very giving is very likely to be able to gain very deep meditation in the practice. This is one way you can gauge somebody's a stage of attainment of a path. So that is about a little bit about generosity. And again, very important, please think about these things. The third precept is about abstaining from sexual misconduct. And the opposite of that, of that is basically the idea of leaving behind the world of the five senses. This is what is the opposite of sensuality. Sensuality on the one hand, non-sensuality is leaving behind everything to do with the world of the five senses. The five senses, of course, when we're talking about this precept, it's not just about sexuality, it's actually about the entire world that we live in our ordinary lives. The seeing, the hearing, the smelling, the tasting, all of these things are part of that. So the opposite of that is actually moving away from that. And this is part and parcel of what this Buddhist path is about, is gradually pulling yourself out of the jungle of the five senses, releasing yourself from that jungle, and then moving to kind of a higher level, is what is part and parcel of this path. And what you are doing there is that you start to realize that the five senses, everything we do with the five senses, all the desire that's connected with that, all the objects that is connected with the five senses, they are actually heavy. They hold you down. They don't make your mind soar and become light and beautiful. But they're actually heavy and they hold you down. And as you start to reduce those desires of the five senses, a bit like an hot air balloon, right? And you throw out the sandbags, or you cut the kind of the anchors that are holding you down on the ground. And each time you throw out one sandbag, it's kind of like it goes lighter. Throw out another one, it goes up even more. And the mind is a bit like that. You chuck out some of the sensuality, and your mind starts to become lighter, and it starts to soar, and becomes high. It's like the idea. It's like an English metaphor. The idea of soaring high. It's like becoming light and becoming beautiful, and something which, it's a very positive metaphor. And it's the idea of soaring up, and cutting all the sandbags, cutting all the rubbish in this world. This may be difficult to see, but I think you can start to see this in your meditation practice. When you start to become peaceful, things start to go well, you will start to see that the interest in the ordinary world is actually at a much lower level than it ordinarily is. Not so interested in the ordinary world anymore. It doesn't really matter so much, because you have another happiness, which is much more profound, the happiness of peace, the happiness of stillness. And you can start to compare the world of sensuality, which basically is a happiness that is always conjoined with craving and attachment. All sensual pleasures, everything we do in this world is connected with craving. Either we are running after that next cup of coffee. I'm being naughty here too. That next cup of coffee. You're always running after something, right? There's something there. It's always conjoined with craving. You're never really satisfied. Or it's conjoined with attachments. All the belongings you have, right? Your partner in life, your family, whatever it is, either attachment or craving. And you start to see that attachment and craving are actually painful states. And the state which is free of these things is actually so much more beautiful. It's a sense of peace, a sense of fulfillment inside of you, a sense of being independent in the world. And just to give you, I'm saying a lot of stuff now, and there's a lot of things being said, but Anyway, I'll continue on that. Just a few more minutes. And the one way which I like to think about sensuality, just to enable myself to get a bit of distance, because it's actually incredibly hard to see. We're so immersed in the sensual world. From the moment you wake up in the morning till the time you go to bed at night, everything is about the five senses, pretty much, right? Always seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, everything is about that. And then you go to sleep at night, and then you dream about it as well. It's just, there's no escape from the five senses. So one way of looking at this, one way that I like to look at the sensual world, is to remember it. So it's another simile from the Buddha, which I like to bring up at this stage. And that is the sense that everything in this world, they're all like borrowed things. They're things you borrow for a short time, and then you have to abandon them sooner or later. All the possessions you have in this life, all the relationships you have in this life, even your physical body, is going to have to go, right? It's going to have to disappear. Sometimes it happens tomorrow. Sometimes suddenly tomorrow your girlfriend or your boyfriend says, okay, had enough, you know, see you, you know, good luck on your own or whatever. This happens all the time, right? This life. Or, you know, some burglar goes, I know Finland is a very safe country, but maybe even here you have a few burglars. So you get a burglar comes to your house and they can, you know, take away your precious possessions or whatever. And in Australia we have all these bushfires, so we had a raging bushfire not so long ago that burnt down 50 houses very close to where the monastery is. And you see the newspapers, right? People are so sad. The house is burned down, all the possessions are gone. And you can see them crying, and they're absolutely, you know, it's a terrible thing. Why? Because of all these attachments that we have. We're attached to these things. So there's always a price to pay. But if you remember that all of these things are just borrowed goods, you're only going to have them for a while. They're only going to last for so long. At the latest, they're going to disappear when you die, right? It's going to all be gone. So the question is, how much effort, how much investment are you going to make in borrowed goods? If you are renting an apartment and you know that in a year's time, you're going to have to give it up again, how much time are you going to spend making up an apartment which you're going to give back in a year's time? Are you going to spend heaps amount of money? Why are you going to spend more money if you think that you own the apartment? Right? You think you own it, right? But that's of course wrong. You don't really own it because you have to give it up. But the idea is that we think that there's a difference between renting and owning. When you rent, you only have it for a while. And when you own, then it's actually yours. But actually, it's not that different. It's basically the same thing. If you rent an apartment, you will tell the owner, you go to them and say, well, actually, it's in bad shape. Maybe we can, I'll pay a little bit, but you should pay most of it because it's your apartment. And then fix it up again. But everything is like this in life. Everything is just borrowed. Everything is rented. Everything is for the time being. And then you have to give it up. So how much time are you going to invest in all the stuff in life that you're going to give up, that you're just renting for the time being? And how much are you going to invest in those things which may, I don't know what your attitude are to these things, but if anything is going to continue after life, it is not the material things of the world, because we can see that. If anything is going to continue, it is those possessions of the mind that you have built up in this life. Those possessions of kindness, of goodness, of generosity, of peace, of compassion. If anything you're going to take with you, that's what you're going to take with you. So invest for the long term, don't invest for the short term. That is the thing here. So when you meditate and you find you can't be peaceful, when you find that you are thinking about sensual pleasures, you're thinking about whatever it is, your house or your job or your family or whatever, then remember all of these things, they are just borrowed goods. I'm going to give it up, I have to give it up anyway, might as well give it up now. So you give it up now, straight away, and then you start to become peaceful. That is just one way. There's many, many different ways of thinking about sensual pleasures. That is a very, very powerful way, I find. So try some of these tricks. And you, of course, one of the problems is that when I say these things, maybe, I don't know if it makes sense to you, perhaps to some of you it makes sense, some of you think that I'm a bit silly or crazy or whatever, I don't know. But the thing is that you have to reflect on these things again and again, and as you reflect on these things, they start to make sense. And they start to become powerful, and they start to become tools that you can use in the meditation practice. So, I think that's probably more than enough already. So yeah, I find I feel a bit tired as well. I've been traveling all day today as well, so I think maybe we stop there. So let's do some meditation together. How much time do we have? It kind of right? How long do we have? To 8, is that right? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, and we have to go by the clock, is that right?
No, we don't. But
people want to go by the clock.
Yeah, that was just what was announced, but we finished it.
Okay, sure. Let's do a quick meditation and see what happens. So just always, every time you meditate, just start off with feeling your body first of all, to make sure that you're nice and comfortable, that you have no pains, that you have no tensions anywhere. And if you feel that there is any tension in the body, in the stomach for example, just take a few deep breaths. As you breathe in, when you let go afterwards, you can feel all the muscles, everything just relaxing by itself. Feel the rest of your body, and if you feel tension in the shoulders for example, just imagine yourself breathing in through the shoulders, and by doing that you expand the muscles, and as you breathe out everything relaxes. can just keep going on around your body here to all the different parts, and don't go anywhere else in the meditation until you feel absolutely relaxed. Just keep on going around over the body again and again. And if there is a place which is a bit reluctant to relax, just say to your body, get the right attitude. Say to your body, thank you body, for all your services over so many years. Now it's time for you to relax and feel just easy and nice. Feeling what it feels like to be nice and relaxed, because this is the first benefit of meditation practice, just being able to relax 100%, just feel what it feels like, and when you start to feel the benefits of this practice, you will want to continue in the future. then when the body starts to fall away, when the body is no longer important, when the body doesn't matter anymore, then the body isn't there, so to speak. The next thing to do is just to sit back and just be aware. Just be aware of what's happening without judgment. There's no right and no wrong in this meditation practice. There's nothing you have to achieve. There's nothing, there's no state which is wrong or right. Just allowing things to be. To be a passenger, an observer, someone who doesn't act, but just observes. One of the critical things of this part of the meditation is to accept things as they are. So everything is just acceptance. Everything is okay. There's nothing to be done except just sitting back and just allowing things to be. keep in mind that if you hear something in the distance, any sound, anything which happens, remember it's got nothing to do with you. Nothing to be involved in. Nothing out there has got anything to do with you right here. Just let it go, let it pass through you, just like the wind over your face. As soon as the wind stops, it's gone. No resistance. No holding on, just allowing it to be here. See if you can actually feel the peace, feel the quiet, feel the benefit of not being involved, the benefit of not doing anything at all. There's a sense of beauty about that, a sense of peace, a sense of not having anything to do in the whole world. What a beautiful thing that is, when often we do so much. Now is the time of peace. Close to the end of the meditation. So always at the very end, it's always good to think back on what had happened. First of all, how do you feel? Do you feel better? Do you feel worse? Do you feel the same? And if you feel better, then ask yourself why that is. What is the cause? What has happened over these last 20 minutes, 25 minutes? Why does the meditation work? What is the cause? Once you start to understand the process, then it becomes possible to repeat it again in the future.
Okay, so that's the end of the meditation.